Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Spotify Green Room. It's a live, audio-only sports talk platform. It's free to download and use. You can talk to other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. And you can share your experiences on the app. All you do is download the Spotify Green Room app. It's free on the iOS or Android app store. Create your profile, link your Twitter, and join a group. Check it out, you guys. Spotify Green Room. All right, guys. Welcome to our Pit Panther Rants, another Sports Rants podcast. Vlad Harris, your host. Brought to you by the Sports Drink. Happy, actually, it's 11:18 p.m. here as I'm recording this, so I don't know, happy hump day, because, you know, hump day, you know, it's technically, you know, midnight, past midnight over in the East Coast, so, and maybe I'm done with this, it's already going to be, you know, hump day. The NBA playoffs underway, and we'll get into that. I just saw the ending of the Suns and Clippers game. Clippers let one slip away. I mean, DeAndre Ayton made a hell of a play. Clippers defended that inbounds as best as they could. I mean, it's just he made – they just made a hell of a play. That was a hell of an inbounds pass. I mean, you couldn't get any better than that. As far as the defending goes, I mean, that's as good as you're going to get. So it just happened to go in. Hope for some of you listening, had a good Father's Day weekend. You know, I spent a little bit with my kids. Then, I went on a date. And then I went to the mall to go walk around because it was raining outside. Well, it was going to rain. And inside this mall, there's an ice skating rink. And I sat and I looked at it and I'm like, ooh, maybe I should go ice skating. And then I thought about it. I thought about lacing the skates up and stepping on the ice for the first time and trying to ice skate. And I was like, no, I really probably shouldn't do this. I walked around for a bit. Mall was kind of eh. So I went back to the rink, rented my skates, and I went on the rink. And it was pretty bad initially. I didn't know what the hell I was doing when I was out there. Because it's been probably, let's see, last time I played ice hockey was 29. I was 29 years old. 41 now, so it's been 12 years since I stepped on any type of a rink. And my knees started yelling at me. They started wondering what the hell my problem was. Why was I doing this? I skated a few laps, and of course you got people on that rink as well. Some are trying to be figure skaters, and they have no idea who's around them, and there's a birthday party as well, so you got little kids trying to skate as well, and you're dealing with that. And I was hoping I wasn't going to fall, you know, and I didn't fall. Luckily, I had some moments. I mean, I was using those figure skates, which sucked as well. I guess they were figure skates because I really wanted ice hockey skates, and anyway, that was no dice. And yeah, that's what happened. Eventually, I got a little groove going, and well, my body started to catch up to me. My back was wondering what was going on. Eventually, though, I think I got a good almost an hour in of ice skating. I did pretty well. I took breaks. I was sitting there wondering how was I managing to do this as a kid, but you know, when you're a kid and you're ice skating, you're obviously going with your friends. And, you know, you're not like skating like constantly, like doing constant laps, consistent laps. Y'all are stopping. You guys are talking. You're joking around. You're making snowballs out of the ice shavings. You know, you're having fun. Or, there's an arcade inside, or, there's food. Yeah, this was, for me, I had to go and just sit down and go on my phone and give updates on what the hell was going on with me. This was a, different type of Father's Day for me, for a lot of things. My grandfather, I mentioned, passed away at age 99 years old. I had for 42 years of my life, and the guy lived a hell of a life, a full life. And I just remember going to visit him with, Johnstown as a kid. He'd always have a refrigerator full of 7-Up cans. And, of course, this past weekend, I went and bought a 12-pack of 7-Up, and I went and had myself a glass and the toast. Because I really didn't feel like drinking at all. And I wasn't, I just didn't feel like it because drinking just throws me off for about a week. But at the end of the day, the sadness for me wasn't there as much because, I was happy. I knew he was ready to go and I was happy he left on his own terms. He may have passed COVID. He got vaccinated. But, I think he realized, it was his time, and because the guy always fought to stay on this planet, and he did what he needed to do to stay alive and to keep going in life, and that's things like that is what you can learn from people, on living. If there's one thing about death is we deal with it. If especially when you lose someone close to you, is you wish you would have had more time with that person. And I had that with my friend who died 2 years ago. And that's how I am with a lot of people. Our mothers or fathers, whoever else, friends. You wish you had more time with them. You wish you had one more moment, one more conversation. Everything. It's funny because my best friend appeared to me in February in a dream. It was kind of odd because it happened right after the snowstorm in Houston that we had. And I woke up, it was still snowing in Houston. And for some reason, the house I was in was the house I lived, I lived with my parents in Pittsburgh. And my truck was about to tip over. And it was my truck that I had when I was in high school, in college. I went to go tend to it, and when I opened up the garage, it was gone. And somebody was driving four-wheeling through all of it. They were going all up and down the street, and the driver eventually stops and talks to this woman. And I'm trying to get to the car to see who it is and knock him out. I open up the passenger door, and it's him. And he smiled at me, and it was like we just saw each other the other week, We were both happy to see each other. And that was pretty much the end of my dream after that. I did hop in the car with him. People asked me, did you drive off with him? And I'm like, no, I didn't drive off with him. I woke up. And they said, that's probably a good thing you didn't drive off with him because that's usually a bad thing. Rest in peace, Pap. But let's get to some other things. A lot of pit happenings. Actually, June has been the month. Has always been the month of pit football, especially in recruiting. Pit, landed 4 commits this month. Let's see. On the weekend of the 14th, or actually 12th. From 12th and 19th, they landed 4 guys. They landed 2 players from New York, 1 from Georgia, and 1 from Florida. The first guy, obviously, was Jimmy Scott. He's a defensive lineman from Hamburg, New York. Offer sheets. He had Boston College, Rutgers. Not bad. But he had Tennessee and Arizona State as offers as well. I mean, those are, you know, this is from Panthers 24/7 site. So that's a pretty good offer sheet. The next guy he landed was Rylan Gandy. He's a cornerback. Offers included Pittsburgh, West Virginia, Auburn, Boston College, and Cincinnati. That's a pretty pretty solid offer sheet. The next guy, another New York kid from Buffalo, New York. Addison Copeland, wide receiver, 6'2", 190. Three-star, one of the top prospects in New York. He had Rutgers, Boston College, Buffalo, and BYU, which, you know, isn't too shabby. And, of course, the last one, Jordan Bailey, Tampa, Florida, running back. Offer sheets included Arkansas State, Austin Peay, Bowling Green, and Buffalo. He's 5'11", 175, so I think, judging by that, his build, he's going to be more of a pass-catching running back. I mean, he's a smaller man. 5'11 isn't a bad height for a back. But at 175, he probably is going to be more of a pass catcher type hybrid, seems like. Obviously, he's not going to be a smash mouth running back. But a lot of these running backs, as you see now in the NFL, they run, but they catch a lot of passes. I mean, they line up. Le'Veon Bell was an example of that. I mean, we saw that. I mean, he caught plenty of passes. Now, Pitt basketball landed a commitment as well, not without some controversy. Jalen Hood-Schifino was supposed to visit Pitt, and Pitt supposedly canceled his visit. And obviously, his uncle Drew, who played West Virginia, you know, Penn Hills, you know, obviously legend of Penn Hills and the Whippeel. He has some words to say about it, because supposedly Pitt was on top of Jalen's list, and Pitt canceled. I wasn't crazy about the canceling either. I was against it. I just thought, you know, there's a lot of politics in recruiting, and I just feel that, you know, it could be bad for Pitt because people do get petty. And I'm thinking for someone of as good as Jalen Hood-Schifino was as a recruit, I mean, how highly ranked he was and things like that, I just thought it was a bad look to cancel a visit with him, that the Pitt should have entertained, you know, bring him here because his family was ready and they were still interested. But Pitt landed somebody who was actually interested in them and wanted to come play for them. And obviously, you know, from reading the articles, it was a really good visit that Judah Mintz had. And that's the person they landed, actually, was Judah Mintz. Top 100 player. I mean, that's one thing I was wondering. I was like, I really hope the staff knows what they're doing, because what we've seen recently shows me that they haven't, you know, that they don't know what they're doing. But maybe things are going on upward swing. I don't know. But I mean, this is good. I mean, they showed me that they were wrong, because I had people in my mentions saying, you know, do you think you know more than the staff? And I'm like, obviously I don't. I just, based on what I've seen, this is not a good, you know, this isn't good. But I don't mind being wrong. I like being wrong, and especially if it goes to the benefit of Pitt. So, I'm willing to eat crow on this. I mean, I'm not sure what goes on after this, but it looks like, you know, the staff, after with the departure of things, you know, things are starting to look a little better for them, and hopefully it gets better, because it needs to get better. And we want it to get better because we want to watch good basketball again. You know, we want to, you know, play an NCAA tournament. We want exciting games, exciting wins, just like the old days, and we just haven't had them. But kudos to Jeff Capel. Now, I mentioned back in 2019, late 2019, the Pitt football was building a culture, and that's what something Paul Zeiss hinted on in his article he wrote about how, you know, he gave credit to Heather Lyke, you know, the athletic department, for sticking with Pat Narduzzi, because obviously the popular decision especially among social media, would be to fire the coach and get, you know, and do it over again. But it seems like, you know, when I said 2019, when Pitt was landing a lot of these players, they weren't just landing, you know, guys with offer sheets with Stony Brook or Fordham. They were landing guys who had actual offers, and not and they were getting guys from all over the country. I mean, they were getting guys from they were cracking the Georgia, Alabama, Florida. You know, they were getting guys. I mean, this past class, I mean, they got a player from Texas. I mean, in Austin of all places. So they're doing, you know, they're basically, you know, they're building relationships with the high schools. And obviously they have a culture now where they're all on the same page with everything, where they know what they need to do and get done, and they're in harmony, basically. Because if there's one thing that hurt Pitt football for a good bit when Pat Narduzzi took over, is they didn't have a culture yet. It takes years to build one. You got to put one together, and he's done that. I mean, you can't just fire a guy after 3 or 4 years. Sometimes it takes longer to put a culture in, and it's taken off. I mean, Dave Ornstadt had a culture, and look what I mean. He knew what he wanted, and that's why he was able to get the, you know, that's why he pulled the recruiting classes he was able to do. I mean, I know we didn't get the result like a BCS bowl game that we were hoping for, but we were still a competitive football team, and we came close, and we were still landing players. And he was, I mean, you can see, I mean, Dave Ornstadt was actually a really important hire for Pitt, more than we know, because the Big East plummeted. They lost Miami and Virginia Tech, two of their top programs. Boston College left. They had to replace them with Cincinnati, Louisville, and, you know, South Florida. Those guys were from Conference USA, and I mean they were decent programs in Conference USA, but they weren't really names that, you know, recruits can relate to. So it's hard to sell a kid to play for Pitt. Especially when the Big East was in danger of going, you know, of losing its BCS bid, because a lot of the media and stuff, they were railing against the Big East, that they didn't want them having an automatic bid and whatnot. But Dave, you know, was able to keep us above float. I mean, sure, he didn't get us to a BCS game, but he kept us in the conversation in the Big East. Eventually, it came crashing down. And of course, what happened after that? The way his firing got carried out, you know, it fractured relationships with, you know, schools and recruiting territories. We bring in Mike Haywood. He gets fired too. He's barely there and he gets fired. Todd Graham is there for a year and bails. Paul Chris, he stayed for 3 years, and he kept us at 6-6. But, you know, that's what Pat Narduzzi had to deal with. He had to deal with all that fallout from what happened from once that's firing to now, to then, when he was hired. He had to pretty much build everything. And not only that, we lost a lot of players due to transfers and whatnot. We had to pretty much put that whole roster together. I mean, it was almost like we gave ourselves our own death penalty. And also, you know, Dave obviously didn't, his, when he got hired, he didn't start all that great. And as much as it pissed us off, he had to deal with some things from Walt Harris's tenure. Walt landed some decent classes, but he had a lot of attrition, if you guys remember. He had a lot of guys, there was one class, I think it was Polka's class, for a good bit of those guys, they weren't even on the roster after a year or two. I mean, some didn't make it on the campus. And he lost some key players, too. I mean, Tyree Young, he lost him to... He got kicked off the team. Monroe Weekly got kicked off. I mean, there were some key players that just... Roosevelt Bynes was one of them. I mean, he didn't get kicked off, but he transferred. I mean, he was... If there's one... if there was one player that was really missed on that 2003 team, it was Roosevelt Bynes. He was inconsistent as a pass catcher, but he was fast, and he can get over the middle. And when he got opened, and actually caught the pass, he was a deadly target. But he, from what I remember, when he transferred and left Pitt, I remember emailing one of the guys who did the article when he went to transfer, and he said that Bynes wanted more playing time and more of the football. Because what happened in 2002 is you had the emergence of Larry Fitzgerald. And when that happened, pretty much, that was pretty much it for Rosie Bynes. And of course, that Rod Rutherford punt throw where he got destroyed in Miami didn't help much either. But he had that to deal with Fitzgerald, being the target next year for 2003. And of course, Princel Brockenborough was coming back. So, I mean, plus you had Chris Wilson. So, I mean, a lot of targets. But he was definitely missed on that team for 2003. I mean, that's, attrition hurt Walt's tenure towards the end. The 2003 season really hurt. And, of course, the recruiting class of 2004 was pretty much the nail in the coffin. Because he had some really good recruits lined up, and he left them at the altar. Anthony Morelli, in the final month, decides he wants to open his recruitment. Andrew Johnson, same thing. Those were two Herald players that were local. James Bryant was another one too. He was a Pennsylvania kid, and he ended up going to Miami with Andrew Johnson. Yeah, just Johnny Payton was another highly talented player, and he went to South Florida, and he was talented, but he didn't stay on the team for that long. He had a lot of off-field issues. But let's take a break for a minute to talk to you about the Kansas City Steak Company. They want to make this your best grilling season ever. Visit KansasCitySteaks.com and get 15% off your order and free shipping with code SD. That's Sugar Daddy at checkout. From classic steak cuts to USDA prime, hard-to-find specialty cuts, and more, Kansas City Steaks has everything you need to fire up the grill. These are steakhouse-quality steaks, aged to perfection. They make it so easy. Each order is flash-frozen, delivered directly. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Enjoy their butter tender filet mignon, hearty Kansas City strip steaks, and savory ribeyes. It's been a hard year, so enjoy being together again by bringing the steakhouse to your house with KansasCitySteaks.com. Go there now and get 15% off your order and free shipping with code SD. That's SD as in sugar daddy at checkout. That's KansasCitySteaks.com, code SD. All right, guys, we're returning back. NBA playoffs are underway, as we've seen that going. I saw some things where people were talking about the current state of the NBA playoffs. You have the Hawks, Atlanta Hawks, playing the Milwaukee Bucks. You got the Clippers of LA playing the Phoenix Suns. And some people were saying this is not good for the league because, we're supposed to have LeBron, we're supposed to have KD, we're supposed to have Curry. I don't know. I mean, if I looked at the thing, and we still have Kawhi Leonard, we have Paul George. I know he's playoff P, but we have Devin Booker, Chris Paul, and of course we have Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton. And we have, obviously, Trae Young. I mean, there's some... To me, this is a good thing that they're having this type of playoff. Because you don't want Curry, KD, all those, LeBron. You don't want the same people in the semifinals or finals all the time. Because what happens is you get these scenarios where people leave their team that go play on quote-unquote super teams. You want to keep the league checked and balanced. You want to have, like, this is good. You're getting, because if players see the Milwaukee kid to get to the finals or Atlanta can get to the finals, then they can go to those destinations instead of following all these other superstars around. Same with Phoenix and the Clippers, although Clippers have had their share of stars. I mean, they had Blake, they had Chris Paul on one team. Let's not forget DeAndre Ayton of Phoenix as well. I forgot to mention him. He had a hell of a game-winning dunk. He's a rising star. Is at that? I mean, you could have had the Sixers as well. I mean, Sixers would have helped because you're getting the Philly TV market in there. But I mean, Doc Rivers. I mean, part of it isn't his fault as well, but. Ben Simmons, I mean, the guy is basically he's a point guard, but he's very limited what he can do. I mean, he's more of a, I guess you could say he's more of a game manager sometimes. I mean, he gets his numbers. I mean, I gave Giannis Antetokounmpo a bunch of shit when they were down 2-0 to the Nets. I said that the Bucks aren't going to get done with Giannis because Giannis is a singles hitter. I was like, Pete Rose was a singles hitter. I was like, but he had Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Dave Concepcion. You know, he had plenty of guys around him. I was like, Giannis is just a singles hitter. He doesn't have much, but I give him lots of credit. They hunkered down and they won in seven. I mean, people are going to blame on Kyrie's injury. Yeah, it was a bad injury, and it may have turned the tide of the series. But they still had those games to play, and that's one did end up winning a game. And, you know, they had a chance at the end as well. I mean, KD was unstoppable. You know, one little, a few little inches, and, you know, he has a 3 instead of a 2 at the end. Hockey's underway, and of course, Vegas is down 3-0, which is satisfying lots of Marc-Andre Fleury haters. I don't understand what the issue is with Marc-Andre Fleury. I know I read about how he performed bad between the 2010-2015 playoffs, those years. I mean, the way people act like this is if this guy, you know, he left for more money, or he, you know, he was like a prima donna, he was banging everybody's girlfriend in Pittsburgh. I mean, people are like literally taking pleasure in this guy failing. And meanwhile, the Penguins can't get out of the opening round. They haven't been the same since. I mean, if they had the Flower, I don't think they would be any better. But, you know, I mean, look at that. Look at the atrocities with their goaltending this past year. I mean, couldn't stand Fleury. They love Matt Murray. Couldn't stand Matt Murray. They got Tristan Jarry, and now they wanted a goaltender now. I mean, the Pens are pretty much, I mean, if they really want to get, I mean, if they want to improve their goaltending situation, you got Crosby and Malkin, and, you know, they're almost, you know, they're in their 30s. And, of course, their careers are about to come to an end here in a few years. Or, you know, depending on how long their body's going to hold up. They're probably going to have to go out to the market and sign a goaltender. Hopefully they can find a goaltender who wants to win a cup, maybe, and he, you know, they're going to have to go to the market and bring somebody in, it looks like, because I don't think they have the patience to draft somebody and groom him, unless he's a really talented goaltender. I mean, if he's like a Hasek, but I don't know. It's all weird to me. Now, John Rahm had a redemption for him. He won the U.S. Open after having been disqualified because he tested positive for COVID in the other tournament. Which was kind of weird because I thought, you know, why don't they just let him finish that tournament alone with vaccinated people? And, you know, it could be just him. You know, make some, you know, arrangements for him to finish that tournament. But, you know, some people say, you know, what about the other golfers? Because, you know, if he's golfing by himself, it gives him an unfair advantage. And, you know, that's a point. I mean, it's a slippery slope to make these things. But Chris Paul of the Phoenix Suns tested positive for COVID as well. And he's out right now, but I know people have their own beliefs with the vaccine and this and that, but if I'm a millionaire athlete and I have money or a championship on the line, I'm probably going to get vaccinated to cover my ass. I know the vaccine doesn't totally protect you from COVID, I mean, you may get it, but it'll lessen the blow by good by a big margin. But I mean, if I'm an athlete, I'm doing that to cover my ass. Regardless, I know people have their own beliefs about masks and whatnot. That's a whole other conversation, and a long one at that. And I'm not going to get into it. So I'll leave it at that. But personally, I'm doing what I can to cover all my bases. You know, for me, I have, you know, personally, I got 3 kids. I got vaccinated. But for one thing, my company was offering the vaccine. And initially, I didn't want the vaccine because, not because of my beliefs, I just felt that the vaccine needed to go to people who really needed it. The ones who worked in the hospitals, in the front lines, and patients at that. But they were like, yeah, you might want to get this now because it's going to be a pain in the ass for you to get it as time goes along. And you might as well get it while it's readily available. So that I did. I went and I got it. The first time I got it wasn't so bad. The second shot was horrible. I mean, I just felt lazy for a few days. And I felt better after that. And not too long, you know, I got better. But anyways, guys, I'm going to leave it here. I'll let you back some of your time. That's 30 minutes. Head up, pit, guys. Talk to you later.